Okay, well, last week we went through the first chapter of Galatians and the first part of Galatians chapter 2, and we looked at this verse in chapter 2, verse 17, and started spending some time on that, and some very interesting questions and insights popped out. So I thought what I would do today is really focus in on this question of the law and grace, and in particular, how you reconcile this paradox that the law is good and it also kills us if we try to be under it. What do you do with this? It's incredibly paradoxical. We went through that last week. And so I'm gonna try to give a very tangible and practical analysis of that today. We'll see. So let's look at Galatians 2:11. This is after, just in terms of review, Peter is, as you recall, really validating his authority of the gospel. And we talked about how the gospel is in here numerous times in this book. But heaven, hell, all that kind of going to hell, is never discussed, because the gospel is the idea of glad tidings, and glad tidings is about a new life. And I was just over in Dallas area with our new grandbaby. Very glad tidings. We have a new life. Okay? But just after she's born, we're not going to stop caring about her. Right? It's actually more interesting, especially to males, it's actually more interesting to watch them grow up. So, but it's really wonderful that they arrive. That's just the beginning point. And the glad tidings is about the whole life. And we're talking here to people in Galatia, Greeks in Galatia. They've already been born. They've been born again. That's why Paul asks, having been born in the Spirit, are you then perfected in the flesh? Because this whole question here is, having been born, now how do you walk? How do you proceed? How do you become righteous? That's the Jewish question. How do you become righteous? Righteousness, what we would say, since we don't use righteousness in our daily conversation, we would say, how do you become fulfilled? Or how do you become everything God intended you to be? How do you get to the point where you are in harmony with all things around you to the extent that God can orchestrate that? That's the basic idea. So the people, the Jews that are contesting with Paul here, have come to Galatia and said, we know how to do that. You follow the law. Well, we're the Jews. We have the law. And we have the covenant. And we have the steps that you follow for days and years and seasons and so forth, and you follow that. That's how you get there. God gave it to us. That's how you do it. There's no other way. And Paul says, actually, if you do that, then you don't need Jesus. He died in vain. Okay. Now, we're not talking about birth that he died in vain. We're talking about living. The just shall live by faith. That's one of the key verses in here. Okay, so Paul is in the process here of, in chapter 1 and 2, of really nailing down his authority in the gospel, the glad tidings, because he's going to contest these other authorities who probably came from Judea. So he's nailing down, like, I got my message straight from Jesus. I didn't go get it from the Judean church. The Judean church would have been the central church, the one that matters the most, the Jerusalem church. Jerusalem's the center of Judaism. I did not get my authority from the apostles. The apostles are, of course, the disciples. He is an apostle, Paul is, but the disciples, the 12 disciples. I didn't get my authority from them. I went and saw them one time, 3 years after I was preaching the gospel. They didn't ask me to do anything different. And then 14 years later, and then he recounts Acts 15, and he says, 14 years later, we had this council in Jerusalem where we had this big dispute, and I brought Titus with me. He's a Greek, and he came uncircumcised, and he left uncircumcised. He wasn't circumcised. And I was in Jerusalem with the council, with James and the elders, and with Peter. And not only that, they agreed with me that this is the right thing to do. And the right thing to do in Acts 15 is, we want everyone to grow in faith. We're all saved by faith. There's no distinction. We Jews, we do circumcision, and we do temple sacrifice, and we do all that stuff, but we're saved by faith. None of that stuff saves us. So let's don't put this on the Gentiles. Let's just ask Him to remember the poor, not do things that eat meat strangled with idols, because we want them to be in fellowship with the Jews. Let's just not have any stumbling blocks, but not let's not put them under this. That's the basic conclusion of Acts 15. So then Paul says, I got my own authority. I didn't get my authority from Judea. I didn't get my authority from the apostles. But I did get validation from the apostles. But then when Peter came to Antioch, he screwed up and I confronted him. Now, why would I confront Peter, the head disciple? Why would I be able to do that if I'm Paul? Because my authority comes from Christ. Okay, I'm not under Peter. You see, he's really nailing this point down. So verse 11, chapter 2, verse 11. Now when Peter had come to Antioch, that's where the Acts 15 story starts. Some believing Pharisees came up from Jerusalem and said, you have to be circumcised. It doesn't say believing Pharisees, but there's believing Pharisees contesting for that in the meeting. So I'm just making a connection there. I withstood him to his face. So Paul stood up to Peter and said, you're wrong. Because my authority comes from Jesus. Because he was to be blamed. He was wrong. And here's what he was wrong in. Before certain men came from James, Judea. James is the head of the Jerusalem church, which would have been the preeminent church full of Jews, believing Jews. Before he came from, he would eat with the Gentiles. But when they came, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing those who were of the circumcision. So he's like, I'm eating with the Gentiles. Oh, they may not like this, so I'll stop. So here's the speech that Paul gives to Peter. And he says the rest of the Jews also played the hypocrite. Even Barnabas they swept away. Barnabas is Paul's ministry partner. So verse 14. When I saw they were not straightforward about the truth of the gospel, the glad tidings, I said to Peter before them all, okay, right in front of everybody, I said this. If you, being a Jew, live in the manner of Gentiles and not as the Jews, why do you compel Gentiles to live as Jews? We who are Jews by nature and not sinners of the Gentiles, knowing that a man is not justified by the works of the law, but by faith in Christ Jesus Christ, even we have believed in Christ Jesus, that we might be justified by faith in Christ and not by the works of the law. For by the works of the law, no flesh shall be justified. Now, if we went back to Acts 15, we would see that Peter gave basically that same speech in Acts 15. So Peter doesn't disagree with this. This verse 17 is the needle. But if, while we seek to be justified by Christ, we're ourselves also found sinners, is Christ therefore a minister of sin? Certainly not. So he's saying, look, the Gentiles are sinners. We're not. They're sinners by nature. We're Jews. But we Jews, we do something that we shouldn't do, which is what? Sin. Yeah. So when we're not sinners by nature, but we sin anyway. I mean, by tradition. Our tradition doesn't have sin in it. The Gentile, I mean, they're born to worship idols and eat meat sacrificed to idols and, child sacrifice. That's what they're trained to do. Our training teaches us to be righteousness, but we sin anyway. Because why is that? Because, yeah, the law doesn't make you clean, right? Okay, so then he says, but if we, Peter, Barnabas, all me too, Paul, if any of us, if we seek to be justified. Now, if we seek to be justified when we've already been justified, what are we saying about the justification that Jesus gave us? It wasn't inadequate. It was insufficient. So we'll take it from there, right? We will complete in ourselves that which Christ was not able to finish. That's the basic idea. And then he says, no, that's crazy. If I build again those things which I destroyed, I make myself a transgressor. The problem is I've reconstructed the law from which I've been delivered. Okay? So now, what I want to do is just talk about this verse for the rest of the time, which is this thing of, even Peter is carried away with this. This is, if Peter's carried away with it, then it's a problem for all of us. It has to be. And so the question is, what things are we rebuilding that are making us a transgressor? What things are we rebuilding? That's what I want to talk about. And how is it we do that? And what is it we do with the law? What does Paul say about the law in Romans? the law itself?
It's a teacher.
It identifies sin. Mm-hmm. And he'll say that in Galatians too. The law is a tutor. He says it's a trainer. What else? It kills us. He said, I was fine before I came to know the law, and then once I came to know the law, I was dead. He also says the law is really good. It's not the law's fault that it kills. Whose fault is it that it kills? Well, ours or sin's, depending on which, you know, we're under sin. And he says, you know, we find this thing, it's not even us doing it, sin doing it through us, making a minister of sin. Okay, so it's sin, it's us, it's the fall. And it's us in the fall and us choosing to sin. That's what kills us. That's the fundamental problem. So what I want to do is look in here at something that is kind of interesting. He talks about circumcision all through here. That circumcision, you know, is just like the entering the covenant of Judaism. It's not the act itself that's at stake. And so I looked through it to see if there's something that would give us a clue as to what things the Galatian Greeks were doing that would have clued Paul in that they're starting to do all this stuff. Because I think if they just would have gotten circumcised for health reasons, none of this would be happening. Okay? So let's look at Galatians 4:10. Just over a page or two. Galatians 4:10. Galatians 4:10, you observe, he's talking to the Galatians now, you observe days and months and seasons and years. I'm afraid for you, lest I've labored for you in vain. Okay, so what is it that they're doing that he says, all of my work for you to teach you the gospel, to teach you how to live in the way that I want you to live, which is, he would say over here in Galatians 2, he says, here's how to live. I've been crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God. This is what he's trying to get the Galatians to do. And he says, I can tell you're not living by faith in the Son of God on your daily life because you're observing days and months and seasons and years. What is that? Days and months and seasons and years. Jewish traditions, yeah. Okay, so I'm going to pick one of those things because the most prevalent of the days is the Sabbath day. So I'm going to pick the Sabbath day. We're going to take a look at the Sabbath day and we're going to see, how do you address something like the Sabbath day? Is the Sabbath day wrong? I mean, would it be wrong for us to keep the Sabbath? Okay, everybody's shaking your head. No, it wouldn't be wrong. But obviously, Paul is really ticked off that they're observing the Sabbath. Okay, so it creates a little bit of tension, don't you think? Because it's not bad that we do it, and yes, it is bad that we do it. Well, how is that? Is it bad to keep the law? You know, is it bad to keep the Ten Commandments? No, it's not bad to keep the Ten Commandments, but it's bad to keep the Ten Commandments. You know, it's bad for that to be that which we're justified by. So how do you reconcile that? What do you do? All right, well, I'm going to propose something, and then we're going to look at some Sabbath passages, and then we'll come back to this. Here's my attempt to be exceedingly practical. The way we reconcile law and grace is this way. Particularly the way we look at the law. Are we using the law to justify, or are we using the law to humble and enrich? Okay, if we're using the law to justify, then what kind of tool are we using it as? Well, yeah, justification, salvation, a ruler. We're using it as a ruler. What do you use a ruler for? To measure. And mostly what do you measure? Distance, okay? And you see if you measure mainly other things, right? You could measure yourself with it. And you compare. Yes, you measure to compare, right? Another tool that occurs to me that you could say is, if we're justifying, is you use it as a club. Okay? Because if I want to justify me, what's important for me to do?
Club you.
Yeah, why do I want to club you?
Make me feel better.
Yeah, what makes me feel better? And also creates a distinction between you and me. So I measure up because you didn't. Because justification, self-justification is highly comparative, is it not?
No matter how bad you are, someone's worse.
Somebody out there is worse at something.
Yeah.
Okay, so what I'll do is I'll focus in on the thing that I can compare with. What do I do with all the other things? Yeah, I justify myself in all those things, right? Those are not much. Gossip and dissension, those are not that important. As a matter of fact, I need to do those things because the truth has to get out about Dean. I mean, everybody needs to know what a scumbag he is, right? So that's just part of my spiritual gift of prophecy. And discernment. Yeah, I'm discerning about that. But this thing over here, this has to happen. You have to wear black socks all the time. If you don't wear black socks all the time, you clearly are not spiritual. You know, I actually grew up in a tradition where if you wear bell-bottom pants, you went to hell. And why would that be? They were new. You know, the basic thing was you had to be 20 years out of fashion or... So for something, I don't know what it was with aging. Once it got 20 years, it was fine. I don't know. At least according to some people, not according to everybody. So, yeah, so if we're going to use the law to justify, then we're going to be empowering something. What are we going to be empowering if we use the law to justify? Ourselves. Yeah. And what are we empowering ourselves to do? Judge. Yes, yeah. Well, God doesn't need to do that. Well, if we're going to do the justifying, why shouldn't we do the judging? Right? If God can't perfect us in our walk, then He certainly isn't sufficient to judge you. So somebody's got to do it, don't they? I mean, we can't let you just run around going crazy and sinning all over the place. What's the world going to become to if I allow that? So I'll just chase you around with my measuring stick and with my club. And in doing so, I'm justifying myself. And I think the last thing is it's something that we say we're going to keep. Okay, something we're going to adhere to. The law is something to be adhered to. It's a standard. It's 12 inches long. You must adhere to this. I know I do. And when I don't, there's good reason. Man, I have to put up with you. And so if I slip, that's your fault for being such a bad antagonist, not mine. Right? Isn't that what we do? So what's the opposite of all those things? So what's the opposite of justify? If we're gonna use the law to justify ourselves, what would the opposite be? Yeah, okay, examine ourselves. Yeah, we could instead of using it to justify ourselves, we could use it to say, "Woe is me, I'm a sinner." Jesus actually used that example, doesn't he? Let's use the prayer. God, I thank you that I'm not like Lee. I know facial hair is of the devil, and I shave daily, except on Saturdays. But that's only to rest my face so I can shave all the better the rest of the week. I thank you that I'm not like that pagan. Right? That's what one guy prayed. And then he said another guy prayed something else. What did he say? God, be merciful to me, a sinner. Which one went away? He actually, I think, uses the word justified. And in this case, he's not talking about the legal justification that Paul uses as a technical term. Now, which one goes away where God says, you're good? The one that beat his chest, right? Because he's using the law. What was the word you said? Self-examine. Yeah, he's using the law to self-examine. Man, I fall so far short. God, I need your help. You see, one leads to an empowerment. The one when we're justifying, what kind of empowerment does it lead to? What?
It's temporary.
A what?
Temporary.
Okay, very temporary.
Self-righteous.
Self-righteous empowerment. Yeah, what does it empower me to do? It empowers me to use my club and my ruler, doesn't it? Over who? Everybody else. Would I ever apply it to myself? Why would I do that? Huh? Only
when it makes you look.
Oh, only when it makes you look good. Very good. Very good. Okay. That's it. You must be really good at this. Yeah, when we actually start seeing this stuff, it's just there is an appropriate amount of chest beating to do, isn't it? Yeah, because we all do this. I'm an expert at self-rationalization. I think one of the key things you want to get out of this is to be even better at recognizing our own self-rationalization process, because we do it on autopilot. You know, Adam did it, didn't he? What have you done, Adam? There's only three people standing there, right? This woman that you gave me. It's just automatic. And he only has two fingers, so he starts pointing. And if you've been around children, you see this. Yeah, so there's an empowerment of us over others and seeking to justify. What's the opposite of that? Yeah. Okay, we can humble ourselves under the perfect standard. What? Where's the power in that?
It's not for us.
Okay, yeah, we can actually plug ourselves into the power of God through dependence. Is the opposite. Let's just look at Paul's statement again in light of this. Chapter 2, verse 20. I have been crucified with Christ. Okay, and he says this right after. Here's the opposite of rebuilding the law. The opposite of saying, here's my set of rules I'm going to use. The opposite is, I've been crucified with Christ, and it is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. Is there any power in that? Yeah, who's the power?
Right.
Yeah, so I've actually got God's power that is now channeling through me. So I can have the power of the law is all about me and my judging and my trying to control your behavior because you need it. And the power of, then the opposite is, I've got Christ living through me and now I'm channeling that out into the world. Pretty exceedingly extreme difference. What's the opposite of using the law as a stick or a club or a ruler? Use it for loving restoration. Boy, that's an interesting thought. What tool would you use to restore someone with, Doc? Yeah, state. Well, you do this in health all the time, don't you? Aren't you trying to restore the harmony of somebody's body? And use instruments to do that. You did it on me one time. You used an instrument and you made me hurt. And my nose was sore for days. You hurt me. You cauterized.
For your own good.
Well, yeah, it was for my own good. Okay, so we actually, this is not necessarily comfortable, this thing, right? It's actually a lot harder to restore someone than it is to judge them. Because when does the judging usually happen? Huh? Okay, well, it happens in a moment. But when's the best time to judge someone?
If
yourself, huh?
When they're down and out.
Okay, maybe when they're down and out and everybody else is against them. There's no that's kind of easy. My experience is the best time to judge them is when they're not actually a part of the conversation.
And then you have to say, bless his heart.
Oh, yeah, bless his heart. He can't have... But, yeah, the best time to assassinate someone is when they're not there, right? That's kind of easy. And usually people will pile on if you'll do it the right way. You know, have you seen Lee lately? Man, I don't know. His mustache is really getting long now, haven't you? Yeah, what do you think's up with that? It probably goes with wife beating and all kinds of, well, what? Yeah, and you just start subterfuge and people start piling on, you know, and... Yeah, but if you're going to really restore someone, you have to confront them, don't you? You actually have to say, hey, Brandon, let's talk about this issue. And Brandon may bite you. You know, he may just bite you when you do that. I could have hit the doc here when he was cauterizing my nose. You hurt me! Okay, well, it wouldn't have been in my best interest because I had this vein that kept bleeding. Okay, and I needed it to stop. And he made it stop. And so when we're restoring, it may actually hurt more for the other person. But what are we after there? We're after their good. We're after bringing them into harmony with the body. And it might even be an encouragement. You might actually go to the doctor, and I'm sure you have this happen, Doc, sometimes, when you say, you're fine. Stop worrying. Okay? It might even be an encouraging word. But we've got restoration versus, using the stick or the club. Okay, so let's look at the Sabbath, and let's look at some verses here, and we'll apply these various principles as we go. Let's first just look at Ezekiel 20. Oop, I'm looking at the time here. Let's skip Ezekiel 20. I'll tell you what it says. Ezekiel basically says, look, now we got to do Ezekiel. I just won't do the context. Ezekiel 20, verse 12. Starting 11. I gave them my statutes and showed them my judgments, which if a man does, he shall live by them. That's the famous saying that Paul uses multiple times, including in Galatians. This is what being under the law looks like. You just do it. It's the Nike's verse. Verse 12. Moreover, I also gave them my Sabbaths to be a sign between them and me, that they might know I'm the Lord who sanctifies them. So why did God give the Sabbath in this particular verse? Yeah, so they could know God. And I think somebody said we can either use the law to judge, or we can use the law to inform ourselves. And when we're using it to inform ourselves, it's very helpful. Okay, so then let's look at Isaiah chapter 1. Isaiah chapter 1. Again, this Old Testament. This is all just before and during the Babylonian captivity, when, if you were in the Exile and Return series. Isaiah 1, 13. Bring no more futile sacrifices. Incense is an abomination to me. The new moons, the Sabbaths, and the calling of assemblies. Just stop it. I cannot endure iniquity in the sacred meeting. You're doing the Sabbath. You're doing all this religious service. I hate it all. Why does he hate it? You're doing it for the wrong reason. This is here to inform you your life, and it's not. You're living in iniquity. So it's not doing any good. So just stop. Just quit. I don't want anything to do with this. Do you see the difference? God gave it as a blessing, and they're still observing it, but it's not changing them any. Because the law's purpose, even in the Old Testament, was to inform. It was so we could see and change. Look at James chapter 1. James chapter 1. James, of course, is one of these characters that was in the Acts 15 meeting with Paul. And he writes this letter. It may be one of the earliest of all the letters. And he's writing it to a Jewish audience. James chapter 1, verse 25. And James is one of the guys that agreed with Paul that we're all saved by grace through faith. That works don't add anything. And he says, Let's start with verse 21. Therefore, lay aside all filthiness and overflow of wickedness. That sounds like crucifixion, like Paul's, I've been crucified with Christ. And receive with meekness the implanted word. That sounds a lot like Paul saying, the life I live by faith in the Son of God who's in me. Okay, receive the word made flesh is Jesus, which is able to save your souls. Save your souls from what? Well, he's talking to believers here. He's talking about the same thing that Paul is. How to live righteously. As a matter of fact, Paul said the gospel, I don't know if you remember this from one of our other lessons. The gospel's purpose is to deliver us from this present evil age. That was one of the verses in Galatians. Be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourself. For as if anyone's like a hearer of word and not a doer, he's like a man observing his natural face in the mirror. For he observes himself, goes away, and immediately forgets what kind of man he is. Okay. So when we mainly focus on our standard being ourselves, and we examine ourselves, what do we conclude after we get through examining ourselves? Yeah, I'm looking pretty good. I'm fine. Yeah, I'm fine. I look a little older, but I look better. Yeah, I'm just distinguished now. Or whatever. Okay? So, but here's the opposite. He who looks into the perfect law of liberty. Isn't that an interesting phrase? The law of liberty. When we look peer into this law and use it the right way, it actually frees us. And continues in it, he's not a forgetful hearer, but a doer. When we use the law and these things in the law to inform us, it actually frees us. What does it freeze us from? Sin, yeah. What is ourself, right? And this even this self-righteousness, it can't, because we go back to the breastfeeding, you know. I'm inadequate. And you see, there's so much power behind this thing that Paul is saying. If we are going to use the law to justify, then we don't really need Jesus to walk. If we will use the Word made flesh, and the Word became God, and the Word was God, and the Word informed us through the Torah, the law, if we use that to see who Jesus is and inform ourselves, it can be incredibly helpful. But we can't be under it. We can't justify ourselves as a result of it. Let's look at how Jesus interacted with the Sabbath. Look at Luke 6. We're going to get more and more ironic here. Who made the Sabbath? Yeah, God did. He did, was one of the first things he did, right? Luke chapter 6, verse 1. Now, it happened on the second Sabbath after the first that he went through the grain fields. And his disciples plucked the heads of the grain and ate them. Well, why would they do that? They were hungry. Yeah. Rubbing them in their hands. And some of the Pharisees said to them, "Why are you doing what's not lawful for you to do on the Sabbath?" Jesus answering them said, "Have you not read this, what David did when he was hungry? He and those who were with him, how he went into the house of God, took and ate the showbread, and also gave some with him, which is not lawful for any but the priest to eat. And he said, the Son of Man is also Lord of the Sabbath." Now it happened on another Sabbath also that he entered the synagogue and taught. And a man was there whose right hand was withered. So the scribes and Pharisees watched him closely, whether he would heal on the Sabbath. Now, why are they watching him closely to see if he'll heal on the Sabbath?
He works.
Yeah, to see if he's going to work. And what are they trying to do? Catch him. And what are they trying to catch him doing? Something really bad. Yeah, something that breaks their rules. Because they're self-justifiers, right? And this, they've got their measuring stick. And their measuring stick has become very elaborate. And Jesus says, these guys keep, they tithe mint, dill, and cumin. You know what mint, dill, and cumin are? Tiny little like seeds and little spices that are just tiny little things. So, okay, I got to count my cumin, you know, and one for you, nine for me, one for you. You see how meticulous they are at this? And yet they devour widows. Okay, so they have got this elaborate system where they're enriching themselves and empowering themselves over others while keeping all these elaborate rules. And it's very wicked. He calls it whitewashed tombs. It looks nice on the outside, but inside it's just dead bones. Okay? And so he knew their thoughts, verse 8, and said to the man who had a withered hand, "Arise and stand here." And he rose and stood, and Jesus said, "I'll ask you one thing. Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or evil?" Which? "To save life or destroy." And when he had looked at them, he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand," and he healed him. And his hand was restored as the other. But they were filled with rage. Why would they be filled with rage? He didn't measure up to their stick. And now they're going to get their club. Because they are self-justifiers. You see what this does? Now, who's actually keeping the law at this point? Them or Jesus? Now, Jesus is actually the one keeping the law. And that's even more ironic. But look at this. Look at Romans chapter 8. Romans chapter 8, verse 4, I think. Let me get there and I'll... Yeah, verse 4. That the righteous requirement of the law might be fulfilled in us who do not walk according to the flesh or the law, but according to the Spirit. So here's this other tremendous paradoxical irony. If you try to keep the law, what's going to happen? You're going to end up being enraged at Jesus because he healed on the Sabbath day. And if you want to fulfill the law, what do? Walk in the Spirit. Isn't that ironic? So can we be informed by the law? Absolutely. Jesus was informed by the law. But when we use it as a stick or a club, it ends up and always ends up in this distorted thing with us as God as judge. And when we use it to show us, you know, woe is me, a sinner, and to see who Jesus really is, then it turns up with, how can I help this poor person with a withered hand? Let's look at one other. Let's look at Mark 2. One other episode. Mark chapter 2. And we'll go into verse 23. Mark 2, 23. Mark chapter 2, verse 23. Now it happened he was going through the grain fields on the Sabbath. They plucked their heads, said, "Why do you do this? Have you never..." Same thing. Verse 27, so it's the same episode. And this time, Mark records another little teaching that Jesus has. In addition to saying, "Therefore the Son of Man is also Lord of the Sabbath," in verse 27 he says to them, "The Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath." Isn't that interesting? Do you think it would be appropriate to say the law was made for man and not man for the law? I think anything that you... All of us are legalists in something. Look, have you noticed political correctness, how legalistic it is? It's incredibly legalistic. You got this group of elites, and they change the rules all the time, but you got these group of elites that arbitrarily make these rules that say you can do this and you can't do that. And it ends up with just absolutely ridiculous outcomes. So this isn't human nature that we're talking about. We're not talking about people who are professing Christians alone. It's anybody that comes up with these legalistic things. And Jesus made all this stuff for us, for our benefit. And we end up using it to our detriment. Let's finish by looking in Colossians and Galatians. Colossians 2:16. And then we'll land in Galatians again. Colossians 2:16. Let no one judge you in food or in drink or regarding a festival or new moons or Sabbaths. So this apparently was a problem in Colossia too. Because how do people get you to, you know, this main stick that people use to get you to conform to their ruler is what? Criticism. It's criticism. This is what the political correct people do. Okay? They use criticism to try to bully people into their way of doing things. And ironically enough, the major thing that they do is teach people to take offense at everything. Right? Everything offends me. But it's only, and then they choose whose offense gets to count. If you got 100 people and one of them, you know, believes in, you know, the clown noses or something, and they wear a clown nose, and that offends the other 99, then they say, no. You have to go with the one that's offended by the 99 that doesn't wear the clown nose. That's kind of the basic approach that they take. And you say, well, who made you judge to judge that the clown nose guy is the one whose offense should be taken into account? Who made you judge? Well, they shout you down. What's that?
Why are you so hateful?
Why are you so hateful? You're not focusing on this clown nose guy. Okay, you're a hater, or whatever. And that's judging. It's condemning. It's accusing. Well, that's human nature. That's what we do. Okay, so let no one judge you in food or drink or a festival or a new moon or a Sabbath. If someone starts criticizing you for this, what are you supposed to do? Well, you want to conform to someone else's criticism? Yeah, don't let it happen. How do you don't let it happen when someone starts criticizing and accusing? How do you not let that happen? Yeah, you just don't go along with it. And in fact, you notice Jesus, how did he deal with these people that are judgers and accusers? Did he curl up in the corner and in a natal position and put his hands over his head? He called them out, didn't he? Well, is he using a stick and a ruler and is he using a club and a ruler?
He used a whip.
He used a whip. Wow, it's another paradox, isn't it? Well, it turns out that when we're standing for the truth of what God's standing for, and actually what he's doing is standing for the guy with the withered hand, right? And saying, I'm willing to stand with that guy against all of you. Well, then it is appropriate to call people out. And publicly. He called Peter out publicly, right? When we're standing for what's true. But Paul is standing for the truth of Jesus, not for his system. Now, this is tough when we're good self-rationalizers, right? It's tough to know which. And so how do we know? How do we know? If you're a list person, this is hard, right? How do you know? Well, this is where we come back to in Galatians. How does Paul say to do this? What is it? How does he say to do it? Let's look at 2:20. I have been crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me, and the life I live now live in the flesh, in my body. I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. He brings in the law here in Galatians 5. The same sort of thing. Galatians 5, 1. Stand there fast, therefore, in the liberty by which Christ has made us free. Do not be entangled with the yoke of bondage. When someone criticizes you and accuses you and tries to get you back under the law, don't pay attention to them. Verse 13, chapter 5, verse 14. For you, brethren, have been called to liberty. You're free. Okay? You're not under these rules. Only do not use your liberty as an opportunity for the flesh. Can you use your liberty as an opportunity for the flesh? How do we know that? He tells us that, and there's one other way we can know that. We've all done it, right? We've all done that. Has Christ rejected any of us as a result? Thankfully not. So that's one thing we can do. And the other thing is, but through love, serve one another. So that's your two choices. There's our two choices. We can either use our liberty as an opportunity for the flesh, including rebuilding the law so we can use it as a stick, and so we can empower ourselves over others, and so we can use it as a club. Or we can, through love, serve one another. Now, serving one another does include cauterizing veins. Serving one another does include calling people out, maybe even using a whip. But not to justify ourselves. In fact, if you want to be one of those kind of people, usually there's a real price to pay when you stand up and say, this is what's true. Because the accusers will all stop fighting one another and unite against you when that happens. Then he gives us an explanation. Verse 14. So this is a chiasm, A-B-B-A. So A is, do not use liberty as an opportunity for the flesh. B is, through love serve one another. And then B, to emphasize the point again, for all the law is fulfilled in one word, even in this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. So the point is love, and then he's going to reiterate the first point, the A, the last thing. But if you bite and devour one another, beware lest you be consumed by one another. And so this is the way it works. On the one hand, you've got law and being self-righteous and being self-justifying. And what does that end up with? What does that look like according to these verses? What is if we use our liberty as an opportunity for the flesh, what does it look like? Did I not make that clear? Biting and devouring one another. Yeah, it's biting and devouring one another. Does that make sense? If I have a ruler, and Cindy has a ruler, and Lee has a ruler, and Brandon has a ruler, and Doc has a ruler, what's likely to be the case if all of us made our own rulers? Yes, you'll be a lot of red knuckles. Why? Our rulers are going to be different, aren't they? And if we decide to get together so our rulers are the same, there's only one reason we would do that. What is that? So we can beat up on Dean. And then Dean's got to go recruit some other people, right? To get back. It creates biting and devouring. There's no other way. There's no other way. On the other hand, if we use our liberty to serve other people, then we do what? What does it tell us? What happens if we use our liberty to serve one another? Verse 14. We fulfill the law. Isn't this crazy irony? So we start with, if we're under the law, it brings death. It's terrible. Don't do it. Don't get circumcised. If you get under the law, you don't need Jesus anymore. If you live the life Paul wants you to, where you live it by faith in the Son of God, what do you fulfill? The law. Isn't it crazy? And that's because we're using it as something to inform ourselves. We're getting our empowerment from Jesus. The judge, we leave to Him. We just speak the truth. We use the law as a window or a mirror. Instead of using ourselves as the standard, we use God as a standard. And it humbles us. And we're informed as to how things ought to be. I have a practical... I'll finish with this. I have a practical application of this that I've used in criminal justice reform. I've actually helped start a national movement. It didn't start off national, and other people did that. But my initial idea was to take Chuck Colson's restorative justice principles and start putting it in statute in Texas. And this thing's grown to a national movement now. And the original idea that really inspired me was Chuck Colson's analysis that the Scripture gives a legal system that is whose goal is to restore people, to restore harmony to people. Just like Doc tries to restore harmony of our body parts with one another. And our criminal justice system is really just kind of, it's really there increasingly just to serve the power of the government itself. and serve the constituencies associated with the power of the government, including prison unions. We actually have some states where the prison unions are lobbying for more crimes and stuff so that they'll have more jobs. I mean, it's just really perverse. And I could spend hours talking about this. But the point is, it's incredibly informative to look at these principles. But if we tried to actually apply this, we would do it selectively. What did Jesus do when the lady was caught in adultery? Yeah, who's without sin cast the first stone. And what he's saying is, look, you guys don't apply this law consistently. You're being selective in your enforcement. Okay, so you go first. And then he says, I could stone you, but I'm not going to, because I want, the whole point is restoration. Isn't that cool? So when we use the law as to inform, so we can see ourselves clearly, when we do not use it to justify, we do not use it as self-empowerment, we don't use it as a stick or a club, but instead we use it as a way to humble ourselves, to inform ourselves. The law is fantastic. In fact, the Sabbath is a fantastic principle. If you aren't applying some Sabbath principle in your life, you're going to burn yourself out. And you're going to get completely caught up in the world, because the principle is to remove yourself in some way where you can get your perspective back and not get entangled in this present evil age. And there's a book that Matthew Sleeth wrote called 24-6 that I really recommend for that. It's the best principle-based Sabbath book I've ever seen. But then if you start making it a law, you'll end up serving it. Okay? Thank you for coming today. Thank you, Jesus, for this fantastic instruction you give us, where the point is not to create a list or a set of rules or a tool or a club, but to change our hearts and who we are as people. And I pray that we'll just take one more step towards living this life Paul wants us to live by your faith in you, and crucify ourselves, set aside wickedness and overflow of evil, and receive with meekness the implanted word, and listen to what you have to say to us and be changed by it, and therefore to go out and love others, and love others the way you did, by speaking truth with grace. In Jesus' name, amen.